is excellent. He made fun of the New Zealand accent. Excellent, the way Ian would say it. And, you know, somebody sent me a picture of a maniacal guy laughing and said, Mr. Crystal. Was he talking about Andrew Crystal? I don't know. We'll have to look into that guy later. So in Eric's book, in the history of Menippean satire, he talks about the role of digression in Menippean satire. And just scanning down through the article, there's a section, Zappa titles, Oh, Those Great Rhythms, : Digression 2. So that means there might have been a digression 1. Yes, the big note, digression 1. He's actually naming and using the word digression, which is a major theme of Menippean satire. Then he has digression 3. So he's saying that I could write this article in three paragraphs, but I'm going to provide digressions and fill up many pages. So in light of McLuhan, who everybody called the Electric Oracle, the Oracle of the Electric Age, was the title. Now, here's I don't know if I've ever spelled this out before. McLuhan does, they do a big spread on him in Life magazine in 1966, and it's called the Oracle of the Electric Age. So 2 years later, Zappa does a big article for Life magazine, and what's he call it? The Oracle has it all psyched out. I was the only person in the world that summer who looked at it and said, Jesus, Frank's talking about McLuhan. Because I'm the only one who fucking remembered that there was an article 2 years before on McLuhan calling him the Oracle. Right? So I'm thinking, is Frank talking about McLuhan when he says the Oracle has it all psyched out? He had known that McLuhan was called the Oracle two years before? No, he didn't. But the words do it. 40 years later, what is this? 47 years later, we are proving. Yes, 47 years later, we are pointing out that he was referring to McLuhan and didn't know it, but the words were. I mean, how you have this twinning of themselves going on for a couple of years, for a year or so before this article, and we're spelling it out. Nobody knew this. Now we're making it visible, and then you can go back and find that Zappa gets one big article in Life magazine when he's at the peak of his media acceptability, and he gets to use the word that was referred to McLuhan. I mean, so beautiful, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
he's predicting Ion. Ion is
everything
the oracular.
Works.
Yeah, everything was. Well, that's too general. Let's try to make it particular. This thing was predicting Ion. The Oracle
really,
has it all psyched up.
From the Genesis back to the Tree of Life, as Ion says, everything has been these thunders appearing to retrieve the power. So it's really the conceptual continuity.
Yes.
In big
now, here's what Frank might have, in his own personal perception, chemical body perception, who do you think he was referring to? He was referring to me. Because I'm there telling him stuff back then that he's finding useful and he's smart enough to appreciate. But he probably liked those young, my grandkids. Who the fuck is this guy? How does he know all this stuff? You know what I mean? He probably was impressed. So he made a joking remark. Bob has it all psyched out is what the title means. Because he would have heard semi McLuhan things from me. Send me this, send me that. And he would have noticed it. Okay, so let's read it. So this is June 28th.
I just want to interrupt very shortly. Because science said, for example, you were mentioned by Joyce and Nostradamus and...
And the Bible. And Moses.
Yes.
Everybody.
Yes, it's like... McLuhan is trying to understand the Logos because he wants to... He always claims he wants to understand the technological environment and its effects. But he was actually trying to understand the connection of the Logos to the thingness and how we create... And, yes, I think in the words, these things show, because this is the link to the non-physical. For me, it's like very logical.
Right. Now, what time do you have to go? It's 7 o'clock your time. Have you got 2 hours or 3 hours left?
8:40.
You only got a half hour left? No, you have an hour and a half left, right? Hour and a half.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, good. So, now what's interesting about this article is Frank lays it out like an inventory of effects. It's semi-journalistic, but he's really got it organized, and he's reviewing the history of pop music, rock and roll, you know, from the 50s till maybe 14 years of music. So it's June 28th, that's 2 times 14. It's 1968, 6 and 8 is 14. So in the history of rock, rock and roll, they usually sort of begin in 54, which is right after that dramatic year, 1953, when many things changed. And you can read in my diaries, Bert would remember how my father and I discussed the changes of 1953. Stalin died, many things happened in that year. So one of the effects of it was the surfacing of Bill Haley and the Comets in 1954. So, Life magazine, June 28th, 1968. So the title is, first section is called The New Rock. Now, I'm going to mute you. You're moving papers around, right? Roxy? Right?
I'm muted. No,
oh, okay, good. All right, so then, Bert, you were muted for a second there, right? You got dropped. No, that's not you.
No, I'm not muted.
Okay, so you guys are available. All right. So here we go. The first section is called The New Rock. Rock music, oh my God, look at this, the first sentence. Now, I haven't read this maybe in 40 years. I might have read it once in the 70s after reading in 68, so it's going to be all new to me. Look at this. Rock music is a necessary element of contemporary society. That's a fucking doctor talking. There's your healing. You're right, there's your healing. You know what I mean? He's not, what would John Lennon have said? He would not have said that. He begins.
Papa claimed that many times, that he was healing.
Household pneumonia.
Music.
Yeah, he was therapeutic. So he goes, rock music is a necessary element of contemporary society. It is functional. It is healthy and valid artistically. It is also educational. In the background, in the brackets, how to ask a girl for a date, what love is like, close bracket. It has all the answers to what your mother and father won't tell you. So rock is the oracle. He's saying the Android meme is the oracle. The oracle has it all psyched out. That's what he's saying. It's a teaching machine. This is like high school version of McLuhan. You know what I mean? He's talking to high school people and explaining exactly how McLuhan, he's talking technically like McLuhan. It has all the answers to what your mother and father won't tell you. It is also a big business. This is a brief history of rock and its relationship to our society. What's fucking more McLuhan-esque than that? I mean, McLuhan does it differently, a little more sophisticated and academic, but this is the same point. He's going to explain the medium of rock. This is incredible. Rock music is a necessary element of contemporary society. It is functional. It is. Now, wait a minute. You guys are claiming you're fucking muted? What's that noise? Look, I'm going
to
mute.
Say something.
All right, no. Let me mute. No, I want your reaction, so it's sort of hard. Just try not to move things so that it's very loud for a minute. Are you shifting your papers around, your notes, your lecture notes?
No.
Your PhD?
I did it, but...
Okay, here we go.
No, but as McLuhan said, the electric environment is creating this effect of people retrieving religion and the meeting.
Right.
And,
so Frank is...
Papa says the religion you have to follow because it's the only one that delivers the good is music, is frequency.
Right. That's right.
Similar to what Ion Denson says, too.
No, that's a good point. The oracle is a religious term, and he's calling rock religious. That's a good point. And you're going to see, he's going to go into that, but I'd forgotten he started off this way. Rock music is a necessary element of contemporary society. It is functional. It is healthy and valid artistically. And this is when people are hating rock. They think it's dangerous hippies and everything else. They banned rock and roll. I mean, it's causing all kinds of problems for 14 years. Rock and roll and then rock. It is healthy and valid artistically. Who the hell? Anybody in the art environment other than Andy Warhol would agree with that? I don't think so. It is also educational. How to ask a girl for a date, what love is like. It has all the answers to what your mother and father won't tell you. It is also a big business. This is a brief history of rock and its relationship to our society. So he's going to do a figure ground analysis. Then he starts off low, like, you know, gesturing the wand. Isn't that what you go when you make the wand gesture when you're a wizard? Low, okay? So he goes low. Then he has fifth, fifth, PFF, PFF. So it starts off with a sound effect, low, and then then he says, a nifty questionnaire to get you interested, so you'll read the rest of the article. So he actually wants you to read the whole article. I mean, this is a serious course he's offering. He goes, part one, the 50s. So here's where he's going to do an inventory of media of the 50s. Who remembers beer? White port and lemon juice. For 10 points, what was the name of the guy in your school who used to buy your juice for parties? Two, who remembers making out and getting hot? For 10 points, how old were you when it happened? Three, who remembers DuckTales, Peggers, leather jackets, bunny shoes, brogans, tight sweaters, teardrops, full skirts with a million starchy petticoats, Sir Guy shirts and khakis? For 10 points, how much did you pay for your St. Christopher medallion? Four, now this is the 50s he's doing. Who remembers gang fights, tire chains, boys with razor blades in the toes of their wedgies, girls with razor blades in their hair, blood and sickening crunch? For 10 points, tell why the cops were afraid of your gang. How come you guys aren't laughing? Did you mute yourselves?
Yes.
Yes.
No, keep your,
okay,
keep your quiet.
I understand that.
Yeah, unmute yourself if you're going to be if you can be quiet so we can hear your spontaneous responses. So anyways, that's pretty good. And he's saying who remembers. I think he's implying nobody would remember it unless prompted. Or maybe they would remember because there is no past in Electric Age. It's always being recycled anyways in news stories. So he lists all those things. And he goes, part two, the 60s. Okay, now here's what's funny. He's going to list things that are happening right now. As if they're obsolete already, all right? Who remembers speed, smoke, acid, transcendental meditation? That was all happening in 1968, and he's already pronouncing it gone. For 10 points, name your connection or guru. There's the drug dealer is the hidden ground of music, or your guru. So that's pretty clever. I mean, he says in the Bob Marshall interview that things happen so fast that your most recent 5 or 10 minutes might become nostalgia for you. I don't know if you remember that in the Bob Marshall interview. He talks about the world will end in nostalgia because you'll become nostalgic for something that happened 3 hours before and you'll just grind to a standstill. So he's implying things are becoming past pretty quickly, and that's McLuhan-esque. Who remembers getting stoned and having an orgy? For 10 points, how old were you when you learned you were incapable of relating to others in a tender, personal way and finally discovered you were becoming asexual? So there's an inventory of discarded effects. Who remembers electric hair, bell bottoms, plastic jackets, sandals, high boots, bulky knit sweaters, Gucci's, miniskirts, Devo shirts, and velvet pants? For 10 points, look around the house, find your beads and bells, and recite Hare Krishna without laughing. Now this, he is in people's faces. What is big in 68, he's asking you to consider the past. Now that's pretty McLuhan-esque.
Yes.
It's bonanza. He said, you guys are celebrating all these fads you guys are into right now is bonanza replays, right?
Yes, he's telling them everybody's doing that. They're already obsolete.
Right. It never happened. All these things you thought you were doing 2 weeks ago are not part of your present. Okay, so then he says, who remembers demonstrations, truncheons, mace, police dogs, the Pentagon, Century City? Century City's in L.A., blood and sickening crunch. He had that on the 50s. Blood and sickening crunch. That was back in the 50s, so it's still there. For 10 points, tell why you were afraid to cut your hair, infiltrate the establishment, and do it the easy way. That's what he does. He starts criticizing these kids in 1969. Then a year later, he's over in London talking at the London School of Economics to the young radicals, the Marxist SDS kind of things. And he's saying, what you need to do is cut your hair and infiltrate the military. That's what he's telling kids to do, if you're serious. So he's saying it right here. Why were you afraid to cut your hair, infiltrate the establishment, and do it the easy way? I don't know what he means by easy way. Cut your hair, is that the easy way? Well, maybe it is the easy way if you infiltrate it. The hard way is to make a big issue out of it, and then the Android Me makes a fad out of it, and then makes money out of your rebellion. Maybe that's what he means. That's the hard way. So he says, our present, so he did 8 questions, 4 for the 50s and 4 for the 60s. Our present state of social sexual enlightenment, is to a certain extent attributable to the evolution of rock and vice versa. So the sexual revolution is due to rock. There's a figure ground thing. And rock evolved because of the sexual enlightenment. So it's intertwined, tactile, right? Our story begins back in the good old days. It is the recreation centers. No Levi's or capris, please. And he has in brackets school functions, unquote. Not in brackets, in quotes. School functions and teen hops were real swell and keen and acceptable to mum and dada. He pronounces dad, D-A-D-A, dada. Now he said... He says that in his autobiography that he never heard of Dada until it was pointed out to him that he was doing Dada, and he accepted it once the definition was laid to him. But when did they tell him this? In 67, 65, 66, pretty early? If that's not a misprint, he's saying Dada right there, even though he's not supposed to know about Dada. I guess somebody pointed out the first day he performed. He said, they were also dull. These school functions and teen hops were acceptable. They were also dull unless you liked to dance a foxtrot. I don't know why I'm mispronouncing words. They were also dull unless you liked to dance a foxtrot as the high school swing band fumbled through an evening of combo orcs and reprocessed Glenn Miller. So in 1954, 55, 56, they still had the high school parties around jazz and swing. The kids would be holding on to each other desperately and sweating. The chaperone would come along and say, quote, 7 inches apart, please, and hold a sawed-off ruler between you and the girl. They had to actually dance 7 inches apart. He says, society was very repressed sexually, and dancing was a desperate attempt to get a little physical contact with the opposite sex. Free love, groupies, the plaster casters of Chicago, they used to make plaster models of rock stars' penises. The plaster casters of Chicago and such bizarre variants as the GTOs of Laurel Canyon in L.A. didn't exist then. Preoccupation with sexual matters accounted for a disproportionate amount of daily conscious thought process and diverted a lot of energy from schoolwork. So here's Frank, the teacher, saying, if we just let these kids fuck more, they'll do better in their fucking schoolwork. Trying to be rational. So I put him and McLuhan in the sex quadrant on the chart. McLuhan analyzed the sexual changes and transformations, but he did it a little more technically. Zappa is an advocate. You know, he's taking a point of view. He's saying, this is where he's not a pure media ecologist, to say that people were repressed in the 50s sexually. No, they had different sensory ratios, different from the sensory ratios in the 60s. So, I mean, look at the Chinese. There's this documentary out now. They didn't have sex for 20 years in Mao's people cultural revolution. Like they're talking to these young Chinese girls and how their parents and grandparents didn't know what sex was pretty well. That's a Chinese sensory ratio. Doesn't mean they're Puritans or repressed. It means they're a different kind of sensory requirements. So anyways, it's like McLuhan said, sex to a tribal person is like a cup of coffee. Preoccupation, well, we did that. this sexual, because the kids were too obsessed with sex, he claims. Now, they didn't become obsessed with sex really consciously until the 60s. But they were becoming asexual because they were becoming discarnate. The TV landscape was making their sexual energies distorted. So they wouldn't mind where they had sex because they were concentrating on their image in the TV landscape. This is before the TV body. So he goes, this sexual problem, this and the low quality of teaching in many kids. What? He left out a word. So there may be mistakes in this. This and the low quality of teaching caused many kids to seek education in the streets. Youth gangs with marvelous names and frightening reputation cruise the streets at night, searching for ways to compensate for the lack of sexually approachable girls. Vandalism and assorted manglings became acceptable substitutes for teen sex. Young men would compete like cowboy gunfighters to be the baddest cat in quotes. This dubious honor would generally entitle its bearer to boss the gang, and in some instances, preferential treatment from those few daring girls who would, quote, go all the way, unquote. So Zappa may be consciously hoiking up the sex meme to bug the bourgeoisie that are reading this magazine. He might not even believe
but,
in that.
McLuhan also said violence was an effect of the electric environment. Because we were losing our identity and it makes us violent.
Whereas Frank is saying it's a chemical body and its frustrations cause violence.
McLuhan said we're just trying to, we're seeking for roles because of this loss of identity. And one of the roles is the gangster.
Right. So Zappa is describing the symptoms. He's making an inventory of the symptoms. He's not looking at the figure ground causes. He's doing, as an American, he's doing efficient causality. He's not doing formal causality. But in the long run, when you see what he wrote that he wasn't conscious of, but his words were, he is doing formal causality. But he wouldn't know those terms. So he says, parents, unfortunately, have a tendency to misunderstand.
Did he cut out?
Oh, I thought that I was the one dropping.
Okay.
No, he cut out.
Carol knocked me out. But I'm back on. Yeah, I'm back on. So what was being, did you guys know we got knocked off? Did I get knocked off?
Yes.
Very sure.
How'd you know?
Yes. You just clicked out. You started to say a word and then you clicked out.
Right. And could you hear me talking to Carolyn because her phone was still on?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because she dropped her phone and somehow affected my phone. Okay. Now what's interesting, here's Zappa who looks like a maniac in the pop culture in 1968. He just attended the Grammys and grossed out a lot of people at the Grammys earlier that year. And so here he is talking down to the parents. He's explaining like Dr. Spock or Ruth, the sex therapist woman, Ruth. He's being a Henry Kissinger, talking, explaining society to the adults. And the adults would consider him a disgusting dirty hippie or something. See the irony here? He's explaining parents to the parents. and most of them wouldn't even know who he was. They'd be reading this and they wouldn't know who Zappa was. But for those that did know him, encountered him, unfortunately, from their point of view, they would find this quite arrogant. Parents, unfortunately, have a tendency to misunderstand, misinterpret, and worst of all, ridicule patterns of behavior which seem foreign to them. When they notice a growing interest among teenagers in matters pertaining to the pleasure-giving functions of the body, they felt threatened. Mom and dad were sexually uninformed and inhibited. In brackets, a lot of things wrong with society today are directly attributable to the fact that the people who make the laws are sexually maladjusted. End of bracket. Mom and dad were sexually uninformed and inhibited, and they saw no reason why their kids should be raised differently. in brackets. Why should all these dirty teenagers have all the fun? End of bracket. Sex is for making babies, and it makes your body grow misshapen and ugly afterward. And let's not talk about it, shall we? So, he does this mundane therapist, sociologist, detached expert, tetrad manager, talking to the Americans. Then he goes, the big note, digression one. Okay, so... Which is satirical. I mean, he's talking to these kids about practical, the parents were practical, but now he's going to fucking talk about something else. A digression. Why does he need
it's like
this digression?
We are talking about something, we talk about the non-physical. He does the same. He's talking about the non-physical.
Yeah,
big
good point.
Frequency, big note.
Right. Non-physical is physical. And when we're saying non-physical, it's a more subtle version of the physical. So it is physical. So he goes, the big note, digression one. In the Abnuchiel's Imuka Electric Symphony Orchestra album, so that's the name of the album that he hires to make Lumpy Gravy, with some of the Wrecking Crew in it, the famous Wrecking Crew. So he calls it the Abnuchiel's Imuka Electric Symphony Orchestra. It sounds like a vomit, a barf sound. The Abnuchiel's Imuka Electric Symphony Orchestra album, Lumpy Gravy. So in that album, there is a section on side two. So he's turning this into an ad for his own work. Hey, this is what McLuhan would do. He's turning the article into an advertisement for his own important works. In this album, there is a section on side two where several unidentified characters discuss the origins of the universe. One of the characters explains the concept of the big note. This is like Ion. You go right for the big topics. You go right to the, you people are fucked. You better go back to source energy. You better get happy or get out. Frank has gone to the big level. This is part of Manipian satire. He starts bringing up the origins of the universe. One of the characters explains the concept of the big note, colon. Everything in the universe is composed basically of vibrations. Hyphen, light is a vibration, sound is a vibration, atoms are composed of vibrations, hyphen. And all these vibrations just might be harmonics of some incomprehensible fundamental cosmic tone. That's Ion, right? The non-physical, the mystery landscape. The harmonics, now that's environmental, harmonic climate. Harmonics of some, the thunders of some incomprehensible fundamental cosmic tone. Then he says, how important is sound? I participated in a conversation recently. Now, this is what McLuhan would do. He'd cite a fucking conversation he had with somebody on the street. You know, like, okay, here's the important evidence. I was talking to Billy the other day. I participated in a conversation recently with Herbie Cohen, in brackets, our manager, about rumors of a government research project. The project, it seems, has been going on for several years. What does sound do to plants? Now, this is the soundtrack, the story in Uncle Meat. He's already talking about it. And Uncle Meat has just come out about this time. No, it doesn't come in 69. Lumpy Gravy and World Show Money sort of come out in the summer of 68, approximately. But he's not talking about the Uncle Meat scenario, which will come out in early 69. But he is saying it here. What does sound do to plants? According to Herbie, a field of corn increased its yield. Dash, the individual ears even got bigger. Dash, because the research team set up loudspeakers in the field and pumped in some music. According to Herbie, the next step is to find out what kind of music the vegetables like the best. Then Zappa says, the ways in which sound affects the human organism are myriad and subtle. Now, he's talking about this research on the effects of sound on people and plants in the history of rock. So he's starting, if you're smart, he's going to explain that rock is a government operation, right? Or something like that could come up here. The ways in which sound affects the human organism are myriad and subtle. Why does the sound of Eric Clapton's guitar give one girl a sensation which she describes as bone conduction? That's in quotes, bone conduction. Would she still experience bone conduction if Eric, using the same extremely loud, thick tone, played nothing but Hawaiian music? Little nod to Bob there. Which is more important? The timbre, in brackets, color texture of a sound, the succession of intervals which make up the melody, the harmonic support, in brackets, chords, which tells your ear what the melody means, in brackets, is it major or minor or neutral or what, the volume at which the sound is heard, the volume at which the sound is produced, the distance from source to ear, the density of the sound, the number of sounds per section, the number of sounds per second or fraction thereof, dot, 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 and so on. So there's a long question analyzing all these aspects of sound as an environment. It's like McLuhan would ask this kind of stuff. Which of these would be the most important element in an audio experience which gave you a pleasurable sensation? An erotic sensation. Look at the kids in school tapping their feet, beating with their fingers. Now that would be tactility. People try unconsciously to get in tune with their environment. In a variety of ways, even the most unconcerned, that's in quotes, even the most unconcerned people make attempts to tune up with their God. So there he's bringing in the religious part, tune up in quotes. Hal Zeiger, in brackets, or maybe it's Hal Zeiger, in brackets, one of the first big promoters of rock entertainment during the 50s, close brackets, says, quote, I knew that there was a big thing here that was basic, that was big, that had to get bigger. I realized that this music got through to the youngsters because the big beat matched the great rhythm of the human body. I understood that. I knew it. And I knew there was nothing that anyone could do to know that out of them. And I knew there was nothing that anyone could do to know that out of them. Not sure what that means. I mean, maybe to get rid of it? I don't know. And I further knew that they would carry this with them the rest of their lives. So here's the government scientists saying, this music is going to program people incredibly. So Zappa is talking about programming the environment, specializing in sound. Right? That's McLuhan.
Yes.
What do you think of this?
McLuhan also... McLuhan also said that rock music...
It's not really a digression. He's dealing with the topic, but it would appear to be a digression. So what were you saying?
No, it's that McLuhan considered rock was going to undo literacy. I remember hearing in one of the speeches that he said rock music was going to bring back the oral tradition. So Frank
is sort
of giving words to it.
He said it already did. Bert, he said it already did kill education. Literate education. So then what'd you say? I drowned out your last sentence.
And then that's sort of what I'm getting from reading what you're reading. Frank's.
Yeah.
Frank is laying it out as well.
Yeah. He's talking about the huge changes between the 50s and the 60s because the sound has changed. The technology has changed. I mean, if someone wanted to be a McLuhanite, but not just blatantly quoting McLuhan, but wanted to make it sort of different in case people were bored of hearing McLuhan. He's doing the perfect representation of McLuhan without mentioning McLuhan, without mentioning the word media. I mean, this, he's totally a disciple of McLuhan here in his motives, too. So that's the big note digression one. Then it says Rock Around the Clock, which is the famous movie, came out in 55, Blackboard Jungle. And Rock Around the Clock was Bill Haley's song, came out in 54. That was like one of the first rock and roll songs. There's a debate about what is the actual first, but it makes a short list. So this section is called Rock Around the Clock, the title of Bill Haley's song. So Zappa says, now, he's going to go personal here. He's going to give personal experience. In my days of flaming youth, I was extremely suspect of any rock music played by white people. The sincerity and emotional intensity of their performances when they sang about boyfriends and girlfriends and breaking up, etc., was nowhere when I compared it to my high school Negro R&B heroes like Johnny Otis, Howling Wolf, and Willie Mae Thornton. So he'd been made tactile, gritty and tactile by listening to rhythm and blues, and the white, jazz-like smooth surfaces of white rock music, you know, just wasn't tactile enough for him. So he says, but then I remember going to see Blackboard Jungle. When the titles flash, okay, so he's going to another medium. When the titles flash up there on the screen, Bill Haley and his comments started blurching, quote, 1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock rock, unquote. It was the loudest sound kids had ever heard. There's the thunder. Good point, Roxy. There's your thunder. It was the loudest sound kids had ever heard at that time. I remember being inspired with awe. In cruddy little teenage rooms across America, kids had been huddling around old radios and cheap record players listening to the, quote, dirty music, unquote, of their lifestyle. In brackets, the parent says, go in your room if you want to listen to that crap, and turn the volume all the way down, unquote. So nobody could hear the radio rock and roll really loud, he's saying. For most of them, they're in their little teenage rooms, huddling around old radios and cheap record players. But in the theater, watching Blackboard Jungle, they couldn't tell you to turn it down. I didn't care if Bill Haley was white or sincere. He was playing the Teenage National Anthem. That's capitalized, Teenage National Anthem. And it was so loud, I was jumping up and down. Now, there's the moving the sound molecules around. He's actually being conceptually consistent here. He goes on for the next 30 years, you know, 25 years, making it louder and louder in many different ways, not just volume loud, making it more and more invisible and digital. So he says, Blackboard Jungle, not even considering the storyline, in brackets, which had the old people winning in the end, end of bracket, not even considering the storyline, represented a strange sort of endorsement of the teenage cause. Endorsement in quotes. In quotes, they have made a movie about us, therefore we exist. But see, that's McLuhan's point. You translate one medium into another medium, it has drastic effects. So for kids, at least in the content, seeing themselves in another medium, that was unbelievable. But of course, there were other more technical sensory effects going on that McLuhan would outline. So Zappa is doing the efficient causality, looking at the content, referencing a bit of the form, but it's the efficient part of the form, the efficient causality, the loudness. So are you guys there?
Yes.
Yep. Let's see. Roxy get knocked off? Yes. You got knocked off, Roxy, right? So you have any comment?
Yes, I wanted to comment, since you were talking about the big note, how, in a way, he's doing his version of the Genesis.
Right.
That at the beginning was the frequency. Yeah. At the, Zappa says at the beginning is the big note.
Right. What did he say? He said, yes. He's talking about in Lumpy Gravy, has one of the characters discussing the origins of the universe. That's on that. We could play that. That's part of Lumpy Gravy. That came out, you know, made in early 67, comes out in 68, and they're talking in the piano. So he's got, you know, Motorhead or somebody doing this put on how it started. So, yeah, there's
yes,
your...
Yes, and like he recognizes the big notas. The first thunder.
Right. And it's, it agrees with Ion that the frequencies and sounds are beneath the atoms. They're prior to the atoms.
Yes.
Yes, but when in the Genesis recording, you say at the beginning, something like that, like George?
Yeah, beginning.
Beginning.
Yeah, that's a quote from Phineas Wake. The beginning...
And I understand with all these things that are shaking are off the foundations of what we think we knew, like, well, there was no beginning and human creatures were always there and the words were also always there.
Yeah, there was no bug inning.
So that's only the...
But Joyce is saying he knows there's no beginning. Yeah, Joyce knows there's no beginning, so he misspells it. The bug inning. The bug, for the little people, the little bugs, they think there's a beginning. So what is it? I think, therefore, I exist. What did Descartes say? I think, therefore, I exist.
Therefore, I am.
Zappa's...
I think, therefore, I am.
Oh, therefore, I am. Mm-hmm. So Zappa is taking a collective medium. It's a they. They have made a movie about us, therefore we exist. That's good media. And he understands that if you're not in the media, you don't exist. He said that in the 80s, but he understands this in the 60s in, you know, very simple, rudimentary ways. He says, because, well, He laid out the effect of Blackboard Jungle, and he goes, responding like dogs. Some of the kids began to go for the throat. They just said, oh, my God, we've been recognized. Now we can kill everybody over 20 years old. Open rebellion, he says. So responding like dogs, that would be the Pavlovian conditioning. Some of the kids began to go for the throat. Open rebellion. The early public dances and shows which featured rock were frowned upon by the respectable parents of the community. They did everything they could to shield their impressionable young ones from the ravages of this vulgar new craze. Hal Zeiger, in brackets, is quoted. Quote, they did everything they could to make sure their children were not moved erotically by Negroes, unquote. End of bracket. From the very beginning, the real reason Mr. and Mrs. Clean White America objected to this music was the fact that it was performed by black people. There was always the danger that one night, maybe in the middle of the summer, in a little pink party dress, Janie or Susie might be overwhelmed by the lewd, pulsating jungle rhythms and do something to make their parents ashamed. Parents, in trying to protect their offspring from whatever danger they imagined to be lurking within the secret compartments, holy shit, of this new musical vehicle. Remember in his play in Time magazine, October 69, he says that the concentration camp is run by a little mechanical Colonel Sanders doll in the glove compartment of a Volkswagen bus. And he has it, but then again, he is thinking this. This is a year before he says that. So I'm forgetting. This is not in the 50s. He's saying what he had scripted out in the fall of 67 when he says on the liner notes to We're Only for the Money, which doesn't come out for 6 months later, he says, this is due to unpleasant premonitions. That's why he updates Captain Beefheart and meets the grunt people, and they all become robots. That's what he discovered in 67. And he's putting these little conceptual continuous things. I mean, you know, he's saying in 69, they're going to find out when they see this movie that the concentration camp was run by the little doll in the glove compartment of the Volkswagen. He's got it right here. The parents thought, in trying to protect their offspring from whatever danger they imagined to be lurking within the secret compartments of this new musical vehicle, in brackets rock music, actually helped to shove them in front of it, whereupon they were immediately run over. So he's saying that the effort, as usual, you know, you get publicity by bringing up the negative, the evil. So in trying to protect their offspring, they killed them. Now, this is pretty detached on Frank's part. I mean, he is telling the parents, he's trying to help them in some way. He's a double agent. He's working for the parents, for Rational Society, against the chaos of Jefferson Airplane and the Grateful Dead and Bob Dylan. He's trying to tell them, hey, you actually helped to shove them in front of it, this new musical vehicle, whereupon they were immediately run over. The attitude of parents helped to create a climate. There's the hidden ground, an environment, a thunder. The attitude of parents helped to create a climate wherein the usage of rock music, in brackets, as a pacifier or perhaps anesthetic experience, became very necessary. Boy, this is getting complex like McLuhan. They created a climate wherein the rock music had to be used as an anesthetic. Parents offered nothing to their children that could match the appeal of rock. It was obvious to the kids that anyone who did not like or attempt to understand, that's in brackets, or attempt to understand rock music had a warped sense of values. To deny rock music was to deny sexuality. Any parent who tried to keep his child from listening to or participating in this musical ritual was, in the eyes of the child, trying to castrate him. And you would include other sensory dynamics, not just the sexual. But that's his title in Freakout, Ritual Dance of a Young Pumpkin or something. No, Ritual Dance of the Child Killer. I think it becomes Ritual Dance of the Young Pumpkin in the Absolutely Free album. Part of the reason I might be stumbling over words, I need a damn drink, but I'm not going to interrupt this. I'll have to go forward. I will suffer. So, in trying to protect their offspring.
Since the First World War, then the Second World War, and then the Vietnam War, America has always been in war, and McLuhan saw war as another effect of the electric environment. It goes so fast that it's like a response of the the speed of innovation.
Body politic.
Yeah,
the body
politic, so many innovations appearing, and there has to be a war because it's like the result of all these innovations in technology. And in a way, many parents were against this music, but they were promoting somehow the values that made their children enlist and go to war, or that was seen as something.
Right. Massive identity crisis. Massive identity crisis in all generations. The parents have an identity crisis, they're creating violence, and the kids are having an identity crisis and creating violence, being violent, or but they thought it was positive. And Zappa says later, radio is new life. So this is a new life form, a monster that's come into their midst. Right? A King Kong.
For example... How come, for example, Zappa didn't have to go to Vietnam?
You know why?
How did he avoid to be...
Good question.
Did
it's a good question, but the answer is obvious. No, you don't remember. He had
a
record. He got arrested. He got set up in the porno bust, and that saved his ass.
Wow.
Back then... Life did him a favor. He had to be there during the Vietnam, the latter half of the second half of the 60s, be out there bugging everybody as a new extension. And he could only have done that by not being eligible for the draft. And that painful bust, well, he's in jail for a horrible 10 days, saved his gut, made him be frank, you know, and within a year or so. That's how he got away with it. He had a record. Back then, they were so fucking curious. What?
Did his father have any influence on that, maybe getting him set up for that?
That's a good point. I don't think so. His father was outraged by the whole thing and supported his son, knew his son was framed and was against it, and helped Frank in some way. But I don't know if people didn't, they weren't in the war yet. The war, this was March 65. The war doesn't really get going until 66, 67, I think, in the public mind. There were skirmishes happening in 65. There had been advisors, military advisors over there since like 59 or 60. That was after the French had tried to do something, but they gave up. This is before the whole dynamic of the war becoming a big social headache. Frank was luckily busted. Bob was working. Maybe I set it up. I was very busy back then. I was framing people all over the place. I might have done it. I can't remember. Maybe I did it. Yeah, we were very busy. I couldn't keep track of it all. There was a period there in 65, 66 where I wasn't in touch with Frank. I visited the Cucamonga studio twice, but I was not going there in 65. I wasn't around him when he got busted. So I probably blocked that. I usually blocked the bad stuff I did. So yeah, it'd be a good case to be made that I set him up. I did that. Or my buddies did it. Somebody was helping me. Somebody was wanting me to get things done, so they had to set Frank up so Frank could help me. Now that could have been ionic. But it's pretty interesting to read this so many years later and see the conceptual continuity he's got here. So he says, there was much resistance on the part of the music industry itself. Now, I know all this because I'm just reading, the past 2 weeks I've been reading Dina Weinstein. She's the widow of Michael Weinstein, who just passed a few months ago. And Weinstein is the main thinker with Croker that made the book The Data Trash. So I was interested in what she had to say as a sociologist. So she's going through all the details of the history of rock, and so it's fresh in my mind that these things. And she throws in some things that we don't know about. For example, that payola was legal back then. But me and my buddies wanted to bust Elvis, so we declared payola illegal and nailed him and Alan Freed. So I apologize for that. But I'm sure it had a good boomerang side effect that led to everything else that we are thankful for. Right? Yes.
Of course.
this is Christmas. Isn't this Thanksgiving? Are we thankful on Christmas? I can't remember. When do we get thankful? Anyways, there was much resistance on the part of the... there was much...
We just got the gifts. Yeah,
what about the gifts?
To be thankful. The gifts were already given, so...
Yes, we already got the Christmas gift to a young nation. There was much resistance on the part of the music industry itself. Hal Zeiger, quote, says, I remember a conversation with somebody, the initials, a very famous songwriter who has written many of our all-time favorites, wherein he chided me for being involved with this kind of music and entertainment. And I said to him, and he names the initial, you are just upset because it has been discovered and revealed that a song written by some young colored child in a slum area can capture the fancy of the American public more effectively than a song written by you who lives in a Beverly Hills mansion. So he's the war is on, the identity crisis. You are just upset because it has been discovered and revealed that a song written by some young colored child in a slum area, remember Cohen says young kids can change consciousness, can capture the fancy of the American public more effectively than a song written by you who lives in the Beverly Hills mansion. So here's Frank. All he's doing is quoting a conversation from Herbie. Frank's living in a little world. He's just making music. He doesn't go out and socialize. He doesn't have a job. He's not out there. So he can only find out about society by talking to his manager, Herbie Cohen, or a guy who's in the industry, Hal Zeiger. And Hal Zeiger's probably listed on Freakout. So... you see what Frank is quoting his immediate neighborhood for this big life change. So where are we at? So then Frank says, every year you could hear people saying, quote, I know it's only a phase. It'll poop out pretty soon. The big bands will come back, unquote. Year after year, the death of rock was predicted, .. A few times, as I recall, it was even officially announced, officially in italics, quote, rock and roll is dead, calypso is all the rage, unquote. So here's Frank saying, this stuff is an environment. His opening statement is, in light of all that, it's necessary. It's a necessary element of contemporary society. It's functional, it's healthy and valid and educational. It's an oracle. So he's talking about it as an environment that can't be stopped by puny opinions. That's McLuhan-esque, right? That's not Theodore Adorno.
Yeah.
That's not Horkheimer. That's not Herbert Marcuse. That's not Freud. All the guys that Ben Watson quotes have no fucking relevance here. As Kevin Currier, who wrote the book on Zappa called The Dangerous Kitchen, he said, Bob, do the McLuhan thing. Stop Ben Watson's nonsense. And we're doing it more than I even anticipated right here, right? Right, who's our yes man tonight? You, Bert? Are you our yes? Yeah, you're Bert. Aren't we making our case that Theodore Adorno is a
very
stupid
good case.
Compared to...
A very good case. Very good.
Yeah.
Case.
We have our yes men here, and we need backup. But the point is that it's so fucking blatant what Frank is saying McLuhanistically, isn't it? He's
yes.
talking technically. He's not ranting on about how great rock music is. He's not bringing in his personal opinion. He's talking about the effects in society, making an inventory.
Yeah, he's doing the McLuhan.
He's what? Doing the McLuhan?
Yeah.
He's doing the McLuhan
thing. Yeah.
All right. No, do not do the sound check environment. What do you call it? The speakeasy, the speakerphone. I can't make what you're saying. You got to come in. If you're going to say something, say what it is. You have to get every syllable.
To see.
Right. You have to change. I understand that. But what were you just saying there?
Yes, that he's doing the McLuhan explorations, the type of exploration, the type of analysis McLuhan does.
Right. And... McLuhan would relate it to developments in art history and go through that. Let's see if Zappa brings in musical history. You know what I mean? Is he going to bring in to compare eras, different regions? That was Rock Around the Clock, which was part of the Big Note, Digression 1. Now he says, oh, those great rhythms, Digression 2. So is it the great rhythms of the jazz era or of pop and rock and R&B? So all those great rhythms, digression two. So then he starts explaining again technically. The function of the drums in a rock music ensemble is to keep the beat. In brackets, quote, it has a good beat. I give it 10 points, Dick. He's talking about American Bandstand, Dick Clark. They would measure the song by the beat and give it points. So some teenager on Dick Clark's American Bandstand would be saying, it has a good beat. I give it 10 points. This is actually quoted by Dina Weinstein in her History of American Rock. On early R&B records, the drum part was usually expected... On early R&B records, the drum part was usually executed with brushes. All the arrangements required, generally, was a dull thud on the second and fourth pulse of the bar. There were very few breaks or fills, breaks and fills in quotes, when the drum fill, in brackets, a short percussion outburst, usually at a cadence or resting point of a musical phrase, end of bracket, became popular in rock arrangements. It most often took the form of groups of triplets, in brackets, three-note rhythmic figures, squeezed into the space of two beats, dot, 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 sounding like ya-da-da, 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 womp. I don't know if that's how you say it. Ya-da-da, 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 womp, end of bracket. For a while, during the mid-50s, it seemed like every record produced had one or more fills of this nature in it. Eventually, with the improvements in studios and recording techniques, the drummers began to use sticks on the sessions, and the cadence fills became more elaborate. But before and after the fill, the drummer's job was still to keep the beat. Dot, dot, dot. That same old crappy beat. Dot, dot, dot. The beat that made the kids hop around and scream and yell and buy records. Look at that. Throw in the little efficient market. Scream and yell and buy records. A long process of rhythmic evolution has taken place since the early... There it is. Didn't I predict that? That he'd do the phases of art history, in this case music history,
yes,
with technical talk, describing the aspects. I mean, here's Frank Forever, the fucking music teacher. A long process of rhythmic evolution. This is like Bach trying to explain electricity to his buddies over there in Vienna or someplace. Right, Roxy?
Yeah.
He probably wrote for a local newspaper explaining the electric interval. How this is very different from the pretty press. A long process of rhythmic evolution has taken place since the early 50s. It is laughable now to think of that dull thud on the second and fourth as lewd and pulsating. So he's pointing at the century shifts made by the technologies. Now he has a section called Green Visors. Isn't that what clerks at gambling joints for? Those little green things on a hat they put over your eyes or something? Green visors? What do you think? Bert, what's a visor?
Yes, 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 the visor. That was the old symbol of the guy in the casino or the
right,
Delta
or
cards.
The bureaucrat, or the Delta cards, or took the bets, or some technical. Maybe Frank is being the green visor guy. You know, he's explaining things. I don't know. So it's titled Green Visor. So he begins again with the only guy he knows, Hal Zeiger. He keeps quoting Hal Zeiger. It's like McCoon quoting Harold Innes. Zeiger says, the problem at the time was basically this. Trying to make the music acceptable, or to try to get the right to expose it. And that took some doing. I knew the kids were listening to the radio stations. Now, this is a guy who's going to do the first rock and roll shows, along with Alan Freed, probably. I knew the kids were listening to the radio stations. It was just a matter of how to merchandise this to get their dollars, too. I told Bill Graham, and he means the founder of the Fillmore and former manager of Jefferson Airplane. So Bill Graham was a household name in 1968. I told Bill Graham, quote, you've got to understand, when these things are underground, that's one thing. But the minute it goes overground, the minute you see it looks like money, everyone wants in, unquote. So then Frank says, so to make R&R, rock and roll, acceptable, the big shots of the record industry hired a bunch of little men with cigars and green visors. Okay, so this is what it is. So he's talking about the Wrecking Crew, the studio musicians, because they're hired to synthesize and imitate the work of the Negroes. So he says, so to make R&R acceptable, the big shots, R&R, isn't that a military term? When you take a break, right? We're going to get some R&R.
Yes.
So he brings in the metaphor, the military aspect. So to make R&R acceptable, the big shots of the record industry hired a bunch of little men with cigars and green visors to synthesize and imitate the work of the Negroes. The visor men cranked out phony white rock. Highly skilled couriers then delivered the goods to American bandstand along with lots of presents.